From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Wang Theater at the City Performing Arts Center in Boston, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Carl Castle. We are coming to you today, as Carl said, from Boston, Massachusetts, with its more than 60 colleges and universities in the general area. Now, truly, this is the mecca of godless communist indoctrination of our youth. So today, as a tribute for our Not My Job segment, we've selected, at random, one of Boston's hundreds of thousands of students to play the game. She's a young woman getting her master's at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Carl, what is that name again?
Ashley Judd.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Miss Judd, we're always happy to help a young co-ed make her way in the world. She'll be joining us later in the show, but first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Kate from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hey, Kate, how are things in Cincinnati?
They're pretty good.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you do there? I'm sorry, that was not skepticism. That was joy. I was excited to know that about Cincinnati.
I work for a green marketing company.
Now, does that mean you work at the green market, or no?
No, it's really boring, actually, but I help energy companies become more efficient.
That's great. Efficiency is important.
Well, I'm sure we could turn the whole hour over to it, but I don't know that that would be efficient.
Might be more efficient to move on.
Yeah, it might be. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and author of the new book, Idiot America. Coming out of Worcester, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Next, one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column is Roxanne Roberts.
Hello.
And the man responsible for everything you might find, and you will find, at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Kate.
You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
As ready as I will ever be.
Alrighty then. Here is your first quote.
I have this lovely feeling all over my body, like, wow, this is really quite exciting. But is it real?
Now, that was a scientist named Willard Boyle. He spent 30 years toiling in physics labs, achieved remarkable things, and all that hard work paid off this week when he was awarded what big prize?
Oh, the Nobel Peace Prize.
Exactly. Actually, not the Peace Prize, but the Nobel Prize. Yes. His was in physics. It's that time of year. Now, usually, the Nobels are awarded to people like Mr. Boyle after years of achievement. But for the Peace Prize this year, they decided to go in a different direction. President Barack Obama won that after 8 months in office for his tireless work engineering the beer summit, we imagine. And it's nice, but isn't this a little like giving the chemistry prize to an 11-year-old boy who says that someday he's going to invent candy-flavored broccoli?
You know, Peter, I think this is just the Europeans' way of saying sorry about that Olympics thing.
Yeah, so it's a consolation prize for the Olympics.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like they shot their wad. Now, I mean, if he does go on and serves out his term and two terms and actually gets something done, what are they going to give him? The Nobel Prize for supreme awesomeness.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote, Kate.
I don't want to interrupt, but...
That was somebody who then interrupted constantly during the first week of the new Supreme Court session. Who?
Oh, Sotomayor.
Yes, Sonia Sotomayor. Very well done. Everybody was so excited by the season premiere of this year's Real Justices of the Supreme Court, especially with Justice Sotomayor taking over from the beloved former Justice Paula Abdul. She ended with a splash, she shouted, you know, why is Latina in the house? Then, of course, to establish her position in the competitive, insulated environment of the Supreme Court chambers, she went right up to the biggest, most dominant justice, Antonin Scalia, and punched him right in the face. Get a show where you are. It's a dog judge, dog.
She's still welcome. Not messing with John Paul Stevens, though. They know better than that.
They do. Now, in reality, during the court session, Sotomayor proved herself to be kind of the Hermione Granger of the Supreme Court. She was constantly raising her hand and asking questions.
That's what happens when you invite girls in, Peter.
I know. Particularly girls who are smarter than everybody else. She asked more questions, this is true, in a single hour session than Clarence Thomas has for 4 years. In fact, at one point she went over to Thomas, she tapped him on the head and said, hey, is this justice on? What? Hello?
So it can be fairly said that John Marshall has asked more questions at the Supreme Court in the last 7 years than Clarence Thomas has. And he's been dead since 1827. Yeah. Okay.
Did you, however, follow the court hearing? Sotomayor was really all over the place. She was just...
She was going to completely wear out Nina Totenberg by the time she's done.
And poor Nina has had to work on her Bronx accent. It's been difficult. All right, Kate, here is your last quote.
And now also, because what can it hurt? I'd like to apologize to the former governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin. I'm terribly, terribly sorry.
That was somebody who's been apologizing left and right on late night TV for a week now. We'll probably be keeping it up for a while. Who?
Is it Letterman?
It is Letterman, yes. So here's what happened. About 7 or 8 years ago, the late night comic came up with a remarkable and subtle plan to boost his ratings. He carefully began having illicit sexual affairs with several female staffers, and then arranged for one of them to move in with a psychopathically jealous guy with gambling debts. When that guy blackmailed Letterman last week, hello, ratings bonanza. Letterman's serial confessions and apologies with jokes have made him the most watched show on late night. Seeing how sleeping with the staff may have helped Letterman in the ratings, other hosts are rushing to cash in. That explains why the entire staff of Larry King Live was seen fleeing out the fire escape.
So, here's my thinking about this. You keep hearing about women defending him, women supporting him, people condemning him, the moral issues. And I keep thinking about this as a labor issue. For example, do you get overtime if you slept with him?
Probably not at his age.
Or undertime. Yeah. No, I mean, everybody keeps talking as if this was, you know, I'm trying to be practical about this.
That. Well, the thing is, I mean, I want to get back to this, is that whatever personal shame he might suffer, his ratings have been the best they've ever been for years. And it occurred to me, I'm a host.
Don't even think about it.
Carl, did Kate do well enough to win our prize?
Kate was wonderful, Peter. She had 3 correct answers, so Kate, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations, Kate. Bye-bye.
I'm sorry, so sorry, that I
We want to remind everyone that they can join us most weeks back home in Chicago at the Chase Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org or at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, we know that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, president of Iran, hates America, denies the Holocaust, and apparently does not own a razor. But this week, the British Daily Telegraph newspaper revealed something else about him. What?
He's a Yankee fan.
Actually, something even worse in his circles.
In his circles?
In the, yes, where he hangs out. This is not a good thing.
He's Jewish.
Yes. The Telegraph, well, or supposedly Jewish, the Telegraph newspaper in Britain examined a photo of the Iranian president holding up a family identification document. And the Telegraph says that if you look at the document closely, it shows that his family changed their name from one that was used only by Jewish families in Iran. That real name? Achma Leibowitz. Other clues to his ethnicity? His regime has kidnapped political dissenters, but always offers them a little nosh first. He was overheard once humming the musical hit, If I Were a Rich Iman. And perhaps the final proof, the mother of the president of the Islamic Republic of Iran is understood to be a little disappointed with him. It's not too late for medical madrasa, you know.
To life, l'chaim, 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 to life. Here's to the father I've tried to be.
Here's to my bride to be.
Bring l'chaim to life, l'chaim. L'chaim, l'chaim, to life.
Coming up, our panelists polish up their resumes and a help wanted bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Mini, featuring the 37 mile per gallon Mini Cooper with go-kart handling. Learn more at miniusa.com/info. The National Association of Realtors, whose members recognize that every market is different. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors, and CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR, National Public Radio.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Charlie Pierce, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Wang Theater at the City Performing Arts Center in Boston, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Donna in St. Louis.
Hey, Donna, how are you?
Fine.
St. Louis is a great city. You guys excited about the playoffs, I'm sure.
Sure.
Yeah, no, are you a big fan, or are you one of those people that don't care?
I'm one of those people that don't care.
Really? Although I noticed you were going to humor me there for a second.
Well, I was, but I decided not to.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Donna, welcome to our show. Great to have you here with us. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Donna's topic?
Extra! Extra! Read all the... Uh-oh. I just got laid off.
We've all heard the dire news that print journalism is on life support with a do not resuscitate order. So imagine our surprise when we saw a help wanted notice for an actual paper and ink newspaper. A job right there. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about an unexpected opportunity in the print world. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. First up, let's hear from Tom Baudette.
How does the gray lady navigate in the world of the text generation? Apparently with a translator. We had to do it, said Melanie Kahn, new technologies editor for the New York Times. When we added text message headline news to our data services, the old strunken whites wasn't doing us much good. We needed form, very short form, over style, and quite frankly, nobody around here knew how to do it. So the Times began advertising on Monday for a person to help translate cumbersome news blurbs, such as Republican Party backs Michelle Bachmann plan to nuke Afghanistan, to GOP, OMG. Or perhaps Democrats fail to pass health care despite supermajority to appear on your phone as Dems, WTF. Asked for comment, Wired magazine media writer Bo Ford said, I suppose this is a good thing, but it's kind of creepy, too, like watching your grandmother play Grand Theft Auto.
The New York Times hires a text message translator for their headlines. Your next story of a help wanted in the newsroom comes from Charlie Pierce.
Despite the economic problems threatening the newspaper industry, there are still spots open for budding journalists. In 2000, Colorado voters legalized medical marijuana. This year, the state loosened the regulations, and new pot dispensaries popped up all over the state. In response, Westward, the alternative weekly in Denver, recently posted an ad looking for the paper's first marijuana critic. This is what we wanted, commented Patricia Calhoun, to be known as the pothead paper. The critic will not assess the relative qualities of the local dope medicine. Rather, the critic will be expected to review the dispensaries themselves. How clean are they? How cheery are they? Presumably, customers will make their own judgments, impaired or not, on the quality of the product itself, and despite the inevitable blurbs. You'll laugh. You'll cry. Well, mostly you'll laugh.
A pot critic in Denver. And your last story of a job opening at a newspaper comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Baby boomers, it's time to go gently into that good night, and the LA Times is going to help. The paper just created a new beat informally dubbed Bye Bye Boomers, designed to cover the waning influence of the All About Me generation. Quote, baby boomers don't realize they're getting old, said 28-year-old cultural editor Marissa Newhall. My mom keeps saying 50 is the new 30, and I tell her, no, mom, 50 is still 50. The new reporter will examine how the newest senior citizens have aged out of target audiences for TV, movies, fashion, music, and social media. Proposed stories include why it's not cool to friend your children on Facebook, why Conan is funny and Leno isn't, and trust us, spandex is not your friend. The new position caused some hurt feelings among the newspaper's older editors until Newhall gave a pop quiz and not one knew if Taylor Swift was a man or a woman. Newhall promises that boomers will still get plenty of attention. Who, she said, do you think is getting all my Social Security contributions?
All right, let me review choices for you. Put it this way, you could apply for any one of these jobs. From Tom Baudet at the New York Times, someone to translate their headlines into text message language. From Charlie Pierce at an alternative paper in Denver, a pot dispensary reviewer, or from Roxanne Roberts at the LA Times, someone to cover the inevitable decline of the baby boomers. Which of these is a real journalism job there for the taking?
They're all equally ridiculous, but since Charlie's my favorite, I'm going to go with his.
Charlie is your favorite?
Yes.
Pure favoritism. That's all that this is. All right, then, you're choosing Charlie's story, where we actually talked to one of the people looking to make this hire.
Calling all potential pot reviewers, Westward wants you.
That was Joe Tone. He's the web editor at the Westward Alternative Weekly in Denver. Congratulations, you got it right.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you, Donna. You were great.
You're into point for Charlie. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Thank you so much for playing, Donna.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
Have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
If he says he swam to China and he sells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
And now the game where celebrities celebrate obscure topics. It's called Not My Job. Our guest this week has starred in smash hit movies opposite Robert De Niro, Tommy Lee Jones, Morgan Freeman, and Morgan Freeman. And now she's doing what all beloved actresses do once they've conquered Hollywood. She's getting a master's in public policy from Harvard University. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome straight from her carrel at the library, Ashley Judd. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. So nervous to be here. I am so nervous. I was
really
thinking about, I was comparing how nervous I am now to how nervous I wasn't when I addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Really?
Yes. And I think then, because I was speaking truth to power in a way that felt very, spiritual, and I was determined, but oh my God, that's Carl Castle. And I was, like, sweating.
So, let's be honest. Isn't it a cliche, actresses at the height of their career walking away to study public policy at the Kennedy School? I mean, come on. Isn't the tradition in Hollywood for stars such as yourself to be involved in causes but without any expertise or actual interest? I mean, you're really bucking the trend here, is what I'm saying. Have you found it difficult to adjust from life as a successful working actor to a student?
No, because acting is what I do. It's not who I am. Mm-hmm. So the transition was fairly easy for me, except for the 20-page paper and style guide and citations.
Right. What's dorm life like for you?
I am eating like a student. Oh, my gosh, the pizza.
Really?
It's so funny. There's something about being a student demands that diet. It's not the other way. It's not their age.
It's just something about the intellectual activity burns those calories. And you need to. Do you sit up late at night and watch your own movies on cable? I mean.
Well, actually, one of my professors, the great Jacqueline Bava, is a great scholar on the issue of the benefits of citizenship and why children themselves are not able to transmit those protections to their parents if they're citizens and their parents are not. Very complex stuff. And I'm like, did you watch Crossing Over? Did you watch my movie?
I have to ask you this. There aren't that many movie stars at Harvard. Do you get special treatment at all?
Some of my peers are here. Cohorts, do I get any special treatment?
I think if they all say in unison, no, Ashley, we know it's kind of not true. I want to talk about your background. You're famously from a musical family. Your mother, Naomi Judd, your sister, Winona Judd, yes?
Mm-hmm.
The Judds. Did they give you a hard time about not going into music? Are they still disappointed in your career choice?
I think they're quite relieved.
Really?
As are millions of pairs of ears worldwide.
Really? Did you try that? Because I know my daughters and my wife are all very musical, and they all like to sing together, and I think if one of them couldn't, they'd be heartbroken. So did you feel that way growing up?
I really enjoyed being by myself.
There you are.
And I just played with my imaginary friends and had a very good time.
This is a serious question. Was it a disadvantage in Hollywood being smart? Because that is just not what people expect and maybe want from people in your position.
Do you know that that's an impossible question for me to answer well?
Why?
Because I'm really not that smart.
Oh, please.
I think that there are lots and lots of smart people in Hollywood. I really do. I mean, Salma's incredibly bright, for example.
I'm sorry, who?
Salma Hayek. You
oh,
might
Salma
have heard
Hayek.
Of her.
Yes, I'm sorry.
She's kind of gorgeous.
I tend to call her Miss Hayek when I'm discussing her. I'll go with that. It's just, I mean, I've known some people in Hollywood, and I think they would be intimidated by someone like you if they knew that you were smarter than they were. And I just wonder if you maybe have had to hide that light under a bushel sometimes, maybe early on.
I was a lot of fun early on. I stayed at home and I read the Russians and listened to Beethoven. I'm not real popular out there. But that's what I did, and it served me well. And I enjoyed the life I had doing that and not getting STDs.
Well, Ashley Judd, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
That prize was rightfully mine! Mine!
This week, the Nobel Foundation awarded the Nobel Prizes, and they shocked everybody, as we talked about, by giving the Peace Prize to our president. Basically because he's nice. But there is a history of interesting prizes that they've given out. We're going to ask you questions about three of them. We took them from metalfloss.com. Get two right, you'll win something from one of our listeners. Even Albert Einstein never won. Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is student Ashley Judd playing for?
The student is playing for Doug Hanna from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Ready? Okay. Robert Lucas won the 1995 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics. He may be the unluckiest Nobel winner ever. Why? A, he died from a sudden allergic reaction to the fish at the awards banquet. B, in his divorce settlement years earlier, he had promised to give half of his Nobel Prize money to his ex if he won it by 1995. Or C, journalists looking into his background after he won the prize find out he had shoplifted $3,000 worth of underwear.
I like B and I like C. What are my classmates out there? Do you like B or do you like... Raise your hand if you like B, classmates.
I'm sorry.
Oh, am I like, they like B? We don't get to do
Is that how they do it at Harvard?
I remember at Harvard getting a sharp slap on the ruler when I asked
did
for
you
help
have to take... You had to take tests, right?
I had to take tests. Yeah, yeah, like, you keep your eyes in your own blue book. What's up with you? Jeez, okay, fine, ask for help. Anyway, your choices were died from a sudden allergic reaction to the fish at the banquet, had to give half the money to his wife because he said he would if he won the prize by the year he won it, or it turns out, when he got a little publicity, that he had been busted for shoplifting underwear.
I'm actually going to go with B because
go with
in my mind it was my first, first instinct.
And you're right. That's what happened. He got divorced in 1987, and part of the agreement was that if he ever won the Nobel Prize, he would split the money, but only if he won by 1995. So
he won
in 1995. It cost him $500,000.
You know what I love about that?
What?
He's the kind of person that, in drafting a divorce agreement, would say, you know, if I win the Nobel Prize, you get to have half of it. Yeah. What kind of person says that?
Hey, I said the same thing when I was divorced.
What kind of person says that?
Or maybe you've got him wrong, though. Maybe he's like, tell you what, I won't give you the house or the car, but I'll give you half my Nobel Prize money. And then he's like, ha-ha, she went for it. All right. Next question. Johannes Fibiger, he won the award in medicine in 1926. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He may not have been the best choice, ultimately, for a Nobel Prize. Why not? A, his great scientific theory for which he won turned out to be entirely wrong. B, he was a pseudonym made up by some other scientists as a joke. Or C, he had Tourette's syndrome, not called that then. And his acceptance speech, sadly unrecorded, caused some to flee the room.
What year was it?
This was 1926.
I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B. He was a pseudonym made up by some other scientists?
May not be correct.
But it's plausible. And as we learned at Harvard, that's what counts. It was, in fact, A. He won for his groundbreaking theory that parasites cause cancer, which, as it turns out, they don't.
Lots of other things,
yeah,
but not cancer.
You think he was disappointed. Imagine how the parasites felt. They were like, dude. All right, this is exciting, though. You remember from Hollywood, you always want to come down to an exciting third act. We have done that, because if you get this last one correct, you will win. Here's your last question. Barack Obama was the surprise winner of the Peace Prize this year, of course, but there were other nominees. And partisans of those people went to some great lengths to try to lobby for their causes, such as which of these? A, an Italian singer wrote and recorded the song Silvio Forever to get Silvio Berlusconi the Peace Prize. He's not so much spreading peace but love, but be that as it may. B, when some fans of Martha Stewart redesigned the Nobel Prize trophy using macaroni and rubber cement just the way she would. Or C, when proponents of Joseph Biden prepared a book of haiku composed entirely of his own utterances.
Oh my God. Who comes up with this stuff?
It just gets slipped under our door before showtime.
I was wondering.
Well, it's a very easy question in one sense because Joseph Biden has never said anything in that few syllables.
That's true. Well, you can cut and paste.
It's probably a long book.
Yes.
I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A, the Italian singer who wrote and recorded the song Sylvia Forever? The audience agrees, and they're all right. It's true.
Yay!
It's A. Here, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, Loriana Lana singing Silvio Forever.
Oh my gosh.
Silvio Forever. Silvio Realta. Silvio per sempre.
Sounds like the Irish Rovers.
Silvio. Everybody! Carl, how did Ashley Judd do on this exam?
Ashley had two correct answers, Peter, so she wins for Doug Hannah. Congratulations.
Well done. Ashley Judd, the talented, successful actor in movies, who's also a student at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Ashley Judd, thank you so
thank
much
you. This was really
for
fun.
Being here.
Silvio forever sarà.
In just a minute, Carl wants brains. It's an undead listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Tom Baudette, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Wang Theater at the City Performing Arts Center in Boston, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much. In just 1 minute, Carl wishes he could save rhyme in a bottle. It's our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, in an effort to reduce weight on their flights and in turn to reduce fuel costs and carbon emissions, Japan's All Nippon Airways is asking its passengers to do what?
To use the bathroom.
Yes, before they get on the plane.
Yeah.
Starting last week, All Nippon Airways began posting staff in terminals asking passengers to go before they go. And then when the passengers say, well, actually, I don't have to, they say, are you sure? Because we're not going to pull this thing over.
And if your bladder doesn't fit in this little framework by the gate, sorry.
Who makes the announcement? Is that same guy that does the terror alert thing? The terror alert level is orange. Please remember to relieve your bladder before entering here.
The airline says, and this is incredible, it says that just making sure that all the bladders on board are empty will lead to a 5-ton reduction in carbon emissions per month. That's what they say. The plan is in trial mode, but may be expanded if it's successful. So far, the main problem has been passengers confusing this new rule with the existing requirement of placing their fluids in 1-quart Ziploc bags. Roxanne, it's 3 years away, but this week we read about a very special cruise scheduled for 2012. 1,309 passengers will have the chance to recreate the legendary voyage of what ship?
The Titanic.
Exactly right. Yes, on the 100th anniversary of the Titanic's fateful voyage, the ship, the Balmoral, will set sail from Great Britain and head into the icy waters of the Atlantic, hoping no one has packed any irony.
I was about to say, Peter, there's tempting fate, and then there's giving it a lap dance, you know?
Right.
The ship...
I'm killing the first violinist I see on deck.
You're going to have to work hard because they have tried to make this exactly like the original voyage. They're carrying the same number of passengers as was on the original Titanic. The meals served will be matching the original menus. Speaking of menus, Miles Morgan Travel for their next project is accepting bookings for next summer's Donner Party dinner party.
Who's going to be the first, like, half-drunk guy that runs down banging on the stateroom wall at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning?
There's so many things that are bad about this.
It's romantic. Didn't you see the movie?
I was going to say the worst possible thing is there might be another movie.
Yeah, I know. Charlie, London's Telegraph newspaper reports that next month the Louvre Museum in Paris will start providing its visitors with a new dining experience right outside the doors of the legendary art museum. What?
Mona Lisa dogs.
You smile after eating them, but you don't know why.
But you can guess.
Yeah.
All right, a dining experience outside the museum?
Yes, very close. Right there, right before you walk in.
A souffle stand.
No.
Escargot stand.
I'll give you a hint.
Look at that, escargot.
I'm louvering it.
Oh, that was such a bad hint.
Hey.
I'll give you a hint.
Excellent.
All right. It's a golden dining experience.
What? Is it, they're going to have it at McDonald's?
They're going to have it at McDonald's, not the Louvre.
What the hell does your clue mean?
It was a controversial decision to put a McDonald's right there at the Louvre, but once again, the French had no choice but to surrender. One Parisian website protesting the plan said it would result in, quote, fragrances of fries drifting under Mona Lisa's nose, unquote. The Louvre has said that a, quote, quality McCafe is, quote, in line with the museum's image, unquote. In an unrelated development, the Venus de Milo has gained 25 pounds. But they want to fit in. They don't want to just go in there and stomp all over the place. So McDonald's has created for this new restaurant a new abstract art value menu, including a deconstructed Big Mac, which is a vat of special sauce and a frightened-looking cow.
No, I think, yeah, while the Venus de Milo did gain weight, watching her try to eat the quarter pounder is really a lot of fun.
McDonald's HQ has already fielded hundreds of complaints from French customers who didn't realize that the Van Gogh burger was supposed to have an ear in it.
Oh.
I'm loving it. Don't you love it too, sister?
Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. You can also find the brand new Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me blog, updated daily. It's more Wait, Wait than is legally allowed in most states. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Matt Colgan from Palo Alto, California.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Palo Alto?
Good. I think it's dipped below 70 degrees today.
Did it really?
Mm.
You're just, well, it was nice in Boston, too. Well, welcome to the show, Matt. You are going to play the Listener Limerick Challenge. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
We Brits know what cyclical means. Take these pants that we bought in our teens. That late 60s passion is now back in fashion. So we're glad we hung on to our...
jeans?
Yes, jeans. The study, which was conducted by a British shopping mall, found that people tend to hang on to their jeans for an extremely long time. In some cases, they found for up to 40 years. The people who held on to the jeans gave a number of reasons. They hope one day bell-bottoms will come back in style. Or maybe they can lose that weight and squeeze back into them. Or maybe they tried to squeeze back into them prematurely and now cannot peel them off. Or if they are Barack Obama, maybe they held on to their mom's jeans in the hope of one day being asked to throw out the first pitch at the All-Star game. All right, here is your next limerick.
We are bird-fearing cops, but not craven. By his beak, real deep marks have been graven. We're enforcing the law, but we fear that great cop, 'cause we can't keep control of that.
Nevermore.
Can you repeat it one more time?
Sure, you can hear it one more time.
We are bird-fearing cops, but not craven. By his beak, real deep marks have been graven. We're enforcing the law, but we fear that great cop, because we can't keep control of that.
It wouldn't be pigeon.
No. It's raven. Raven is the answer. The answer is raven. Being stalked is bad. Being stalked by Heckle and Jekyll is even worse. Just ask this woman in Germany. She has been stalked by what officials describe as an incredibly clever, malevolent raven that spends its time stealing her groceries, sitting on her car, and tapping on her chamber door. Police trapped the evil bird in a box. It easily escaped its jail and returned to torment her. Police say the raven probably either has an unnatural, inexplicable hatred of the woman or just got sick of her incessant "that's so raven" jokes.
The bird broke jail?
The bird broke jail, man. The bird got out of the box.
I don't trust the police in that town.
All right, you have one more chance. You get this last one, you will win it all. Here is your last limerick.
If they ate my brain, how sad would mom be? Wait, do undead guys wear Abercrombie? Keep our collars prepared for all natural scares, but we're fine when it comes down to...
pigeon.
Zombies.
Zombies, yes. How would you know if you were in the middle of the zombie apocalypse? Well, first, Are you surrounded by, quote, flesh-eating, life-impaired, moaning individuals, unquote?
Yes, I live in Washington.
There you are. Well, the University of Florida will now be defenseless against the undead because school officials have removed the zombie preparedness guide from their disaster preparedness website. Apparently, they didn't feel that that little joke was appropriate next to very real guides on how to deal with hurricanes and pandemic flu. And we're guessing they didn't want a repeat of an incident where a confused school nurse tried to treat a very hungover frat brother with a chainsaw. Kill the head, kill the ghoul. Carl, how did Matt do on our quiz?
Matt did well enough, Peter. Two correct answers. So, Matt, you win our prize.
Very well done. Yeah. Thank you, Matt. Now it is time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Charlie Pierce has the lead with 4 points. Tom Baudette and Roxanne Roberts are tied for second. Each has 2.
All right. We have flipped a coin, and Tom has elected to go first, so the clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. President Obama continued to hold meetings this week to rediscuss strategy in blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. The number of U.S. workers filing blank claims hit its lowest level since January.
Unemployment.
Right. Italy's constitutional court ruled that blank can be prosecuted for corruption while in office.
Silvio Berlusconi.
Right. On Wednesday, astronomers announced the discovery of a huge new ring around blank.
Saturn.
Right. A confidential British government document intended to advise officials on how to prevent the leaking of a confidential British government documents was blanked.
Leaked.
Right. On the internet, some football fans expressed concerns that one of the investors interested in buying the St. Louis Rams is blank.
It's Rush Limbaugh.
In fact, because he has stress fractures in both feet, blank had to drop out of Dancing with the Stars.
Tom DeLay.
Right. In an effort to reduce incidents of drunken brawling, spectators at an auto race in Australia will be limited to blank.
In Australia?
Yes.
6 beers.
No. 24 per day. It's like they don't want people to have fun or alcohol poisoning. You know how it is, though? You're out having a couple dozen beers, and then you have that 25th beer, and all of a sudden you get a little sloppy. The Great Race, as it is known, is actually a 3-day race, so drunks can look on the bright side. It's really a 72-beer limit. In celebration of their new, more sober image, the Great Race has adopted a new motto: know when to say when, then have 18 more beers. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had a great round. 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 16 points.
Well done. All right. Roxanne, you're up next. Fill in the blank. This week, officials began vaccinating people to prevent another outbreak of blank.
Swine flu.
Right. The blank claimed responsibility for the bombing of the UN compound in Pakistan.
The Taliban.
Right. The New York Times traced the ancestry of blank back to a slave in South Carolina in 1850.
Mrs. Obama.
Right. Police in Chicago arrested a man accused of taking videos of ESPN reporter blank through hotel peepholes.
Aaron... The cute blonde, the really fabulous, sexy, cute blonde, Erin Andrews?
Yes.
Okay.
Two jumpy convenience store clerks in Iowa may have overreacted when a suspicious-looking drunk man wandered into the store and they blanked.
They threw money at him.
Yes, they did. Romanian-born German novelist Herta Müller was awarded the Nobel Prize for blank.
Literature.
Right. Andrew Lloyd Webber announced plans for a sequel to Phantom of the Opera that will be set at blank.
See, we've done the Paris Opera House, so we'll say the Paris sewers.
No, Coney Island. A man in Ohio was arrested at an Apple store for blanking.
An Apple store for having a complete and utter meltdown because all the geniuses ignored him.
No, he was arrested for threatening his own iPhone with a gun. We've all been there. We've all been there. Donald Goodrich walked up to the Genius Bar with his misbehaving iPhone and yelled, "I'm so mad I could pop a 9mm at it. I'll do it right now. Look." And he lifted his shirt up to show his iPhone, the gun, concealed in his waistband. See? Unfortunately for Goodrich, his iPhone was equipped with the hog-tying crazy people app, which he triggered. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, but Tom still has the lead with 16.
All right. Now, it just so happens, Charlie Pierce, the pride of Newton Mah, has yet to go. So, how many does he need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
Here we go.
Here we go,
Charlie. This is for the game. For the game, Charlie. Here we go. Fill in the blank. The governor of Tokyo said that, quote, invisible dynamics led to blank being picked for the 2016 Olympics.
Rio.
Right. After nearly 70 years in print, this week it was announced that blank magazine is being shut down.
Gourmet.
Right. A woman in Idaho had to get her hearing aid repaired after she blanked.
Failed to hear the truck that hit her in the left ear.
No. Mistook it for a milk dud. Afraid for some reason that he might flee, Swiss officials denied bail for blank.
Roman Polanski.
Right. On Friday, NASA went ahead with plans to crash land 2 spacecraft on the blank.
The moon!
Right. 2 thugs in Swansea, England made a mistake when they decided to assault 2 men wearing dresses and high heels when those men turned out to be blank.
Mixed martial arts cage fighters.
Yes, cage match fighters. The 2 men, the 2 hooligans, were caught on surveillance cameras picking out random people in a holiday crowd to assault. Then their eyes alit on 2 men wearing skirts and high heels, who, as it turns out, were cage match fighters dressed up for a drag event. The hooligans took one of them by surprise, but then, and now I quote the Daily Mail, the other cage fighter, wearing a sparkling black dress and matching long wig, sprang to his friend's help, delivering 2 lightning-quick punches to the 2 stunned yobs. The cage fighters were then seen teetering away in their high heels, stopping only to pick up a clutch bag they dropped during the melee. Best story of the week. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz? Did he do well enough to win?
I know he needed at least 6 to tie, but Charlie came up short. Tom Beaudet with 16 points is this week's champion.
Well done, Tom. Well done, Tom. Now, panel, how will Sonia Sotomayor make her mark on the Supreme Court? Charlie Pierce.
She will become renowned for whispered asides that crack up her fellow justices, prompting the new History Channel special, Sotomayor Sotto Voce.
Roxanne Roberts.
In an effort to loosen up Clarence Thomas, Margarita and Mambo Mondays.
And Tom Beaudet.
Across the judicial landscape, the customary response to a weak legal argument will be the Bronx cheer.
Well, if Justice Sotomayor does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Roxanne Roberts, and Tom Beaudet. Thanks to Terry Park, Corey Lewis, and everyone at WBUR in Boston. Thanks to our fantastic audience here at the Wang Theater. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.